This is a September 22 episode of Pods for Docs.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to an episode of Pods for Docs. My name is Sinyu Tai. I'm a neurology registrar in Oxford, lifelong student of medicine, and host of this podcast. I'm very pleased to have Dr. Z on today, who is a GP in the United Kingdom, to talk about the interesting and important topic of hypothyroidism in primary care. Welcome, Z.
Hi, Zen. Glad to be on.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on. Are you excited?
Absolutely.
All right, let's jump right into it. Firstly, could you tell our listeners why is it important that we know about hypothyroidism in primary care?
Hypothyroidism is something that we see as a GP very often. In fact, hypothyroidism is the second most common endocrinology condition seen by GPs just after diabetes. And hypothyroidism is actually managed mostly by GPs, not endocrinologists. So very rarely do we ever refer anyone with primary hypothyroidism to the endocrinologist. And that's why the big load of management of hypothyroidism is handled by GPs, very much like diabetes. I'm talking about type 2 diabetes here.
Got you. Yeah. So I think that's really quite key, isn't it? It's so common, and it's common for someone who sees lots and lots of patients. And I also contend, and you may disagree with me here, but it's also quite a good thing to know for your exams, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. It's very commonly asked in exams as well.
Okay, well, we'll go into that later. So let's talk a little bit more about hypothyroidism. How common is this condition?
So the annual incidence of hypothyroidism is about 3.5 per 1,000 in women, and in males is about 0.6 in 1,000 in the UK.
So that is really quite common for a condition. And in terms of the most common causes of hypothyroidism, what are we looking at here?
I think by far it's going to be autoimmune. And whether it's Hashimoto's or an atrophic thyroiditis, both autoimmune conditions. And I think if you just remember the word autoimmune as the most likely cause for a primary hypothyroidism, for the exams at least, you probably get that right.
I suppose then it is no surprise that, as you said, women have this condition much more than men. And so that's another way that you can link it in your memory to remember for exams.
Absolutely.
Now, you mentioned Hashimoto's thyroiditis, and I think, you know, in medicine, we're generally moving away from eponymous conditions. However, Hashimoto's does come up quite a bit. So would you like to expand a little bit more for our listeners about what exactly Hashimoto's thyroiditis is?
So Hashimoto's thyroiditis is an autoimmune condition characterized by an aggressive destruction of thyroid cells by various antibody-mediated immune processes. It sometimes presents as a goiter that can remain unchanged or change over many years. In terms of, you know, antibodies, you always are thinking about thyroid autoantibodies such as the anti-thyroid peroxidase or the anti-thyroglobulin antibodies, which you would find positive in Hashimoto's. Now, is it important you differentiate Hashimoto's from other forms of primary hypothyroidism? Probably not so important in terms of in a clinical setting. And the reason behind this is because the management's the same. You're going to give levothyroxine to anyone with primary hypothyroidism. So whether we do these antibodies or not, it's not going to change our management.
That makes sense. Hashimoto's thyroiditis is just a form of autoimmune thyroiditis, which is, as you said, the most common cause of hypothyroidism. So that's really useful to know. Thanks a lot for expanding on that. And I suppose we should just say for listeners that the other most common autoimmune thyroiditis is an atrophic thyroiditis. And that's just when, you know, the thyroid cells just stop working, and that tends to happen with age.
Yes, that is right.
Great. We've talked a little bit about how common it is and what could cause hypothyroidism. Let's talk about how it can present. You know, paint me a picture. What are you expecting from your patient with hypothyroidism?
So the common symptoms that someone would come in with would be tiredness. That would be the number one complaint, you know, lethargy, tiredness. And then if you want to ask a bit more specific questions, you realize that they're also cold intolerant. They would have dry skin, a bit of hair loss, we have difficulty concentrating sometimes. And if you ask about any GI side effects, you realize they'll be a bit more constipated, they have a bit more weight gain, and they'll have menstrual irregularities. This could be menorrhagia, and then later on, if you develop into oligomenorrhea or amenorrhea. The trick here, Zin, is that I think the key word is tiredness, because that's what's going to get you to order the next set of bloods, because GPs tend to have 10-minute appointments. So we may not go through all the questions to find out, are they in line with hypothyroidism? We might ask a few questions and do a panel of tests that would help us identify if this is hypothyroidism or something else. Because remember, you do not diagnose hypothyroidism based on symptoms alone. You need blood tests to sort of confirm this. So typically what we would tend to do is anyone that comes in with tiredness, we say, let me get you a panel of bloods. This would include a full blood count, which would also check for anemia. We would do a renal profile to check for possibly CKD, which may cause tiredness, or any electrolyte imbalance. We would do a liver function test to assess any underlying liver pathology. We do a fasting glucose to see if diabetes is a possibility. We might go further and do an IgA tissue transglutaminase to look for celiac disease, which can present without bowel symptoms. Mm-hmm. And so tiredness alone could trigger you to think about IgA tissue transglutaminase. And then lastly, if you thought this person's at risk of vitamin D deficiency, you would add that in as well. And all these tests goes in line with a TSH. So when you order a TSH, you're thinking about all these other tests to help you differentiate if this patient is having symptoms of hypothyroidism or something else.
So that's actually really useful, Z. So you've in fact told us your approach to tiredness in general, which is really important because I imagine that's one of the more common complaints that you get from your patients.
Every day, Zin. Every day.
All right. So there you have it. So I think a listener should take away that fatigue and tiredness is a key symptom of hypothyroidism, and it goes hand in hand with many of the other symptoms that you have also described. I'll just add that for me, the way I think about hypothyroidism is everything slows down, doesn't it, Z?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you have, you know, slower thinking, slower movements, slower mood, slower constipation, if that makes sense. And I think that is absolutely in line with all that you've said. And you very, very usefully highlighted then the following investigations that you would do. And that's really useful for all our listeners. Let's zoom in a little bit closer to the investigation findings for hypothyroidism then. You've mentioned TSH, but if you could expand a little bit on that, and also what would the T4 and T3 show? Because I think that's what everyone always thinks about, TSH, T4, T3.
So the first thing to realize is when you order a TSH, that's sufficient. You don't have to add in a T4 or T3, because if the TSH is abnormal, the biochemists would automatically do a T3 and T4. They don't tend to do it if the TSH is normal. Now, when you're thinking of a hypothyroid picture, you're thinking of a TSH that's very high and a T4 that's very low. Yeah, that's in fitting with a hypothyroid picture, because the body is trying to stimulate the thyroid gland. And so that's why TSH levels are much higher. But the thyroid gland, unfortunately, can't be stimulated enough to produce enough T4. And that's why treatment's important.
Got you. So just to recap, high TSH, low T4 makes you think of hypothyroidism. And Right. Just before we get to treatment, see, I may just ask you, what does subclinical hypothyroidism refer to then?
So subclinical hypothyroidism is where you have a raised TSH, but your T4 is still within the normal limits.
Uh-huh.
So it makes you think, it's almost there. It's almost like an overt hypothyroidism, but not quite there. And in fact, very few of them later on convert to a overt hypothyroidism. But the question out there is that do we tend to treat it or do we not? And we'll probably discuss this later on about do we treat subclinical hypothyroidism? And it's a very debatable question. We know for sure we treat overt hypothyroidism, but subclinical hypothyroidism is a bit more tricky.
I see. I think that's also quite important because often these terms get thrown around in the clinic setting, but also in the exam. So thanks for clarifying that. And now let's move to treatment. How would you manage hypothyroidism in primary care, Z?
The first thing to remember is you need your blood test. Once you get your blood test, which shows overt hypothyroidism, which means your TSH is raised, your T4 is low, you can start levothyroxine. And levothyroxine started by the GPs, not by endocrinologists. We aim for a dose that's around 0.8 to 1.6 micrograms per kg. So if you have a 60 kg man or woman next to you in a clinic, that would be around 100 micrograms of levothyroxine. We don't tend to titrate up. We just start on that dose, start the full dose immediately. We only titrate up if the patient's elderly or in a patient with an ischemic heart attack, where you want to be cautious about how much levothyroxine you're giving. In those situations, yes, you can titrate up. But in majority of people, you start with the full dose.
So if they're hypothyroid, just replace. Don't worry about titration unless there are some special considerations.
Correct.
And in terms of monitoring, is there anything that you do going forward in time?
You tend to check their TSH 12 weeks after any dose adjustment or any treatment that you've started. Now, once the patient's stable, then you tend to do that annually. And that's a TSH that's annually. But you only tend to do that once you've stabilized the patient. And until then, you do 12 weekly TSHs.
And in terms of long-term, from my understanding, patients who are treated with levothyroxine generally do really well.
Yes, their symptoms improve rapidly. It can take a couple of months, but you can see their entire, you know, you can see the way that they come to the GP. They come with a lot more energy, I would say, Zin.
That's perfect. That's what I would like as well. Okay, so thanks so much, Lee. I think you've done a really masterful job taking us through hypothyroidism for primary care, starting from the causes to how you would expect the person to present and how to treat as well. Are there any final messages that you'd like to give our listeners?
Yes, I think the important thing to remember is how to manage subclinical hypothyroidism as well. People at the junior level need to remember is that you don't tend to treat right away for subclinical hypothyroidism. You tend to repeat the TSH in about 3 months' time. And then that would guide you on, should you manage with levothyroxine or should you just tell the patient, let's hold that off for now. And of course, there are certain scenarios that you would give levothyroxine for someone with subclinical hypothyroidism, but they're usually quite, I would say, I wouldn't say rare, uncommon maybe. And those would be where a TSH level is above 10, 3 months apart, and that patient's very symptomatic. And usually, you know, age is important to look at this as well. So if the patient's symptomatic and below 65 years old, you might consider levothyroxine. But in an elderly patient with subclinical hypothyroidism, you probably hold off because of the risk of osteoporosis and atrial fibrillation. So okay. I think those things you might want to think about. But the important bit is that if you do see subclinical hypothyroidism in the exam and they ask you for the next step in management, well, you're going to be looking for the answer that says repeat a TSH in 3 months.
Thanks. That is really interesting. And it also lends towards the saying that we should treat the patient rather than just the blood test result, doesn't it?
Correct. Yes, okay. Absolutely.
Very nice. Fantastic, Z. So thank you so much again for joining us today and giving us this illuminating episode on hypothyroidism. And we hope to get you back for another episode very soon.
Thanks, Zen. Thanks very much.
What a great episode. Do check out the Hubbable website to find out more information about hypothyroidism for primary care, along with lots of other great resources for your revision. We will catch you at the next episode.